movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
I'm delighted to say Leslie Williams and Serena Bellissimo and Esther McCarthy join us once again. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello. There you are, you're grand. Yes, fantastic. Don't fright. Our hashtag, by the way, before I forget it, is, as I was saying already, Moobs Movies. So, The Tip Man's Bodyguard, Hanging Down, Diddy Daycare, and the most disgusting so far, White Men Can't Lactate. Thank you for that thought. So, the two movies you're talking about today, Esther, is it you decided you wanted movies featuring the letter J?
No. Well, everybody's talking about Jamie's quite a biggie, actually, and... you learn something new every week in this business. And I suppose this week I've learned that Richard E. Grant makes a very pretty drag queen. Very
right.
Pretty.
Okay, yeah.
So that's, yeah, this is really sweet, this one. It's on Amazon from tonight and it's an adaptation of a big West End hit, which itself was based on a real life story about a teenager by the name of Jamie Campbell. Back in 2011, he featured on a documentary for the BBC called Jamie Drag Queen at 16 and told how he came out as Fifi Latrue on his prom night and whether, yeah, the names are great, actually. In fact, yesterday, because I do these things when I'm on a deadline, I found a site where you can find your by your initials and the month you were born, you can find out what your drag name would be. Because that's what I do on deadline, and I was delighted.
Is that like
to
a rule? If you're a drag queen, you have to do it that way, or
no? It was just this automizer thing. When I was researching something else, it came up, and I thought, "Oh, I like the sound of that."
Right.
I am April Felicia Filth, and I think that's just
you
perfect.
You certainly are. Sorry, repeat. Are you April Felicia Filth?
I'm April Felicia Filth.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Fabulous. Right.
It makes me want to put on ABBA and get dancing right there. It's
right.
I looked yours up too, Sean. Do you want to know what yours is?
Yeah, go on.
You're June Mimi Filth.
June. So. Oh, we're related. How lovely.
We're drag cousins.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's lovely. Anyway, April, what's the other movie we're doing today?
Rose Plays Julie is really good, actually. It's an Irish kind of psychological thriller. It pretends to be one thing and then turns into something else, which is really interesting. It stars Anne Skelly. We're like a farm for emerging talent at the moment. There's just so much talent breaking through out of Ireland. It's really exciting. And here we have Anne Skelly, a Dublin actor who is in the HBO series The Nevers at the moment. It's a big sci-fi series, but she's also in this. She's the lead in this and she's really, really good in it. She is a student who wants to... I want to give way too much here. She discovers who her birth mother is. She knows she's been adopted for years, but she finds out who her birth mother is and she becomes a little bit fixated, I would say, with tracking her down. That her birth mother is played by Orla Brady, who doesn't want to meet her her daughter, who she gave up years and years earlier. And the reasons emerge in really interesting ways why that is the case.
Oh, right. OK. And we're going to Leslie, we're going to the Rhone Valley today.
The Rhone Valley. So the cool north and the warm south. And there's quite a difference between the two. People tend to think of them as similar. The south is huge. It's massive. But it's almost more Provence than Rhone when, you know, in terms of what compared to the wines that are made in the northern Rhone. So I have a very fragrant, delicious, creamy Viognier, which I think you like. And then I have one made by three Irish blokes who own some land and buy some grapes and stuff down in the southern Rhone. And they are there as we speak at the moment making grapes.
It seems like every week you hear about another Irish person who's in France making wine.
It's true. Simon, one of them has been doing it for quite a while, but a couple of years ago he joined up with two other blokes and I think the other two helped invest in the vineyard and so on. And so and they're known, very really well known to the trade, so you'll find these wines, well this one in particular, really easily. I'm sure, I wouldn't be surprised, I'd say this has been on, not been at this one, but some of Simon's wines have been on here before, I'm sure of it.
Right,
so Simon
okay.
Tyrrell,
because Mick O'Connell has a share in a small...
he's in Sardinia, I think. So I think, because his wife's from Sardinia. And so I think he basically, I think he either buys grapes or, I don't know, but he makes it over there and makes it all natural and it tastes it's good.
Oh, no, but it seems to imply you don't need to be like a zillionaire to do this or anything.
No. Yeah. And in fact, you probably had the Roisin Curley once.
Yes, Roisin indeed. Yes,
a pharmacist up in Mayo, for anyone who doesn't know, who just got obsessed with wine. I mean, she still works as a pharmacist most of the year, but some of the years she goes off to France and she meets courtiers. So a courtier is someone who knows people, and the courtier will introduce her to a grape grower in Burgundy, and then will agree a contract, and then she will basically buy the grapes from them. And can, you know, pretty much from August, she's there from the beginning of August, because that's the most important month. And during the year, she'll be dropping in, keeping an eye on the vines. That she's kind of rented, basically. They're still owned by the producer, but she makes the wine and then she borrows cellar space. And you can do this relatively cheaply and affordably, actually. Well, relatively affordably.
And these courtiers, are they like Tinder for wine?
Kind of, yeah. Oh, well, they're kind of like, they're matchmakers. That's what they are. They're matchmakers. They're like Amanda and Claire.
That's kind of sweet. Yeah. That is kind of sweet. Right, Serena, because because we're coming back, it's starting to rain again. And so there's loads of good TV coming. So you can run through. Do you have dates for when things are coming back?
I do. I am so excited. Today, The Morning Show with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. It is back. Did you watch season one?
No, don't have Apple. I just thought I have too many apps as it is, and I just drew the line.
Do you know what? It is so worth getting Apple, because there's that. There's also, what's that football one I'm watching that I'm loving at Ted Lasso? Yeah. Ted Lasso as well. It's worth doing that. And Apple have been very smart too. They've gone down the Disney Plus route and they're only releasing once a week. So you either get it now or you wait until The Morning Show is 10 episodes long. The reviews haven't been great. I will be going back though, and I will be checking it out, because season one was so good. But if you're not into The Morning Show and you don't have Apple TV, Netflix, Sex Education season 3, absolutely brilliant. I binged the 8 episodes. I got a preview to it. Binged the 8 episodes in 3 days. It is so good because, yes, it's all about the current cast, the young people, but it also delves into the lives and the sex lives and relationships of the older cast as well. There's a couple of new people in that as well. So that's all available now. This is the one I am so excited about, Sean.
Yeah, I think most people would be, yes.
Did you get addicted to Succession?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do not love Succession.
Well, people had been talking about it for a while, and it took me a while. I think it was, I can't remember what lockdown number, but it was in one of the lockdowns. And we binged the 2 seasons. It's been 2 years since we've seen the lads.
Crikey.
Yeah, because they were due to start filming in, like, I think it was February, March of 2019. So they had to stop because of something called a pandemic. Yeah. But they are back on the 18th of October on Sky Atlantic at, on Sky, 2 a.m. on Monday, the 18th of October.
Right, that's what normally they do,
yeah. But if you, because they're doing it the same time that it's running in the States, if you forget to series link it, it'll also be available on Now. And finally, a series that you've really enjoyed, Kevin Can F Himself with Annie Murphy from Schitt's Creek. That has just 8 episodes, season 1.
Oh, no, they had to have a season 2 because it was a cliffhanger at the end,
but
really.
Do you know what? I just finished it and my nerves just couldn't take it.
Oh, my God, it's so dark.
Yeah. And it is really dark because it's got that sitcom thing as well. But I was watching it with Brian. I was like, I don't want to hear that there's a season 2. And then last night he taps me on the shoulder and goes, sir, there's a season 2 coming.
Oh, no, there had to be a season 2. And it was extraordinary the further you went along in that. Every time they did like the sitcom bit and you had to hurl this can of laughter, it would just, your nerves, like, I couldn't look at a 90s sitcom now without getting that weird...
On edge,
someone's going to go berserk here and kill everyone.
But you also have to... I found like, I was like, okay, I'm gonna opt out now. You have to watch the whole 8 episodes to really get where her mind's at. And it was the most successful... There's a streaming service in the States called AMC, the most successful launch.
And she was really
phenomenal,
fantastic.
Wasn't she?
Because apparently she nearly gave up acting before she got the part in Schitt's Creek.
I spoke to her about that. And like, her house had burnt down. She was down to literally...
Oh, crikey. She was a country and western song then, basically.
Yeah, completely. Down to almost nothing. And she was auditioning for another role and they went, no, we think we want you for this one. Someone had been cast in that role actually, and then they went, no, they saw her and went, let's do this. And her life has completely changed. And she, I mean, she's fabulous in Schitt's Creek, but wow, in this series, isn't she phenomenal?
Oh, no, she is. Yeah. And even the accent. Well, yeah. I don't know that, but it sounds like it's that accent.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Have you seen any of these shows, Leslie?
I've heard of that one.
Yeah. Right.
Amazon Prime.
Yes. We have that. So there's no excuse. My wife has watched a couple of episodes. I just haven't had a chance. I've just been busy the last couple of weeks.
Succession is extraordinary because you will watch that and you will go, I hate every single one of these people. Yeah. So why am I watching this?
I am being pestered to watch that very much. Yeah.
Oh, you have to. Yeah, and you won't be able to stop.
I know.
Yeah. They're utterly vile. No, I've heard. They really are.
And I'm so jealous because now you get three seasons in one bulk sitting.
Yeah.
No, look, it's ridiculous. We haven't watched it. We have been watching other, like, on-trend stuff, but not those ones.
Okay, sorry. I didn't want to make you feel bad or anything. Just to add one hint of horror to today's proceedings.
Of what?
The next remake they're going to make is of The Bodyguard.
Oh, yeah. God. Now, that's... Yeah. Look, it's such a favourite, 1992. I mean, sometimes with classics, there's no need to remake them. But I think after the success of A Star Is Born, I think that was done like three times, Gaga and Bradley Cooper, there was such success around that. And I think maybe because our generation loves it, the current generation probably don't have an affinity to it. So they've gone, you know what? Let's remake it. The Tony-nominated playwright, Matthew Lopez, he's been hired to write this. Mm. One of the original writers is now going to be a producer. I mean, this film grossed $400 million.
Wow.
It's famous. I mean, Whitney and Kevin together. Now,
That awful song. Sorry, I never liked that song.
I Will Always Love You. No,
and also, it's a rip-off of Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue. It's exactly the same
melody. It's a Dolly Parton song, isn't it?
So, there you go.
Well, I'm just getting excited by some of the suggestions that are getting thrown about, including Lizzo. She's put herself forward. She put a TikTok together and it's like,
wow.
She has this thing with Chris Evans at the moment. And she's like, I could be Whitney. And
she could, but do you know that final scene where he's carrying her off the plane? I'd pay her cash money to see that one.
Well, it's funny that it's actually really funny that you mentioned that because one Twitter person, I love this, they've suggested that they will watch this if John Legend is the singer and Charlize Theron gets to carry him out.
Actually, that would be good too. Yeah. Right, so they haven't cast it yet. They just have a writer.
They've just got a writer. So look,
Charlize can do no wrong. I mean, she can do no wrong.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if they change the sex
around.
It'll be the my maths is really bad. 92 to 20. It'll be the 30-year anniversary next year. Will they have enough time to write, make, and release next year? Don't know. I probably wouldn't be releasing it on such a big milestone. Maybe wait to 2023.
I know, but they give Kevin Costner a bit part. He's like that.
Oh, he'd have to. Yeah.
He's like
his boss,
limo
isn't he?
Driver or something
or
like
his
that.
Boss, the boss of the new bodyguard.
Yeah. Something like that. So that'd be grand. Anyway, right, let's move on to our first wine of the day.
Okay, so
tell
just
us about
hand it over to you first. Yeah. On a second.
Now, Leslie's handing me his favourite glass, as in physically his favourite glass. So this is a very tense moment for me.
I have one of them just because I broke the other one.
Yeah, okay. Apparently it's very light.
Give it a ting.
Oh God, that's lovely. That's like being in a Buddhist monastery. Yeah.
So look, I mainly drink at a Riedel, but I have a couple of Zalto glasses that I really like. Zalto, imported by Searsons, and I think really only available in Searsons shop in Monkstown. And it's so fine. If anybody's eaten in I'm Sure restaurant, they have them, and a few restaurants have them. So I mean, one of my favourite neighbourhood restaurants is Michael's in Marion. Gaz out there, he has a couple of Zalto glasses, but if you're not good, he'll give you a little plastic cup to drink out of. They are easily broken. They're about 27 each, but for a hand blown glass, that's not too bad.
You know, okay, they're made by hand. Yes, they
are hand blown. Well, I mean, I presume they're hand blowing into a mold or something, rather than just sort of like literally by hand. I don't know how you could do that because they're very consistent. How do you find it?
Oh, it's lovely.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's really lovely.
And you're right, it smells amazing too.
Yeah, tell us about the wine that's in it before I drink it all.
So, Viognier, right? So this is the great grape of the Northern Rhone. There's one little hill, the Hill of Condrieu. Let me just tell you briefly where we are. Let's say you're in Paris, you head southeast of Paris, you'll hit Chablis, keep going another hour, you will hit Dijon and you're in Burgundy, and then that's the River Saône is the river we'll be going along there.
Now, is Viognier not the same as White Burgundy? Or is
it's nothing to do with Burgundy. We're in the Rhone, so I'm just taking a little geographical tour.
Okay, keep going.
So in the Saône, the Saône River is the River of Burgundy, and then just that goes down through Beaujolais, and then the end of Beaujolais is where you hit the city of Lyon, And in Lyon, they mostly drink Beaujolais, but they also drink the wines from south of them. Because you've got an hour, about 40 minutes south of that, you are in the Rhone Valley, because the Rhone and the Saône join together in Lyon. And Rhone then doubles in size, becomes this furious, fast-flowing river, cuts big, steep, rocky hills, basically, as it goes down. Not a river you want to fall into, as somebody said once, at that point anyway. And then those big hills, those steep hills, and you're in a continental climate with a very windy mistral blowing through, this can just be perfect growing ground for this one white grape Viognier. There's two others, Marsanne Roussanne, which you'll find are a little less expensive. But Viognier from Condrieu, they're usually 70, 80 a bottle. The guy who makes this, Yves Quiron, he is famous for his Condrieu. He came into the wine business late. He inherited his uncle's land in his 20s and decided to give up everything and become a winemaker. And he has just kind of transformed. Back in the day, he was one of the people transforming the region. And then Viognier became popular suddenly, having almost died out, and is now available from around the world and from the Languedoc. But he's still the master, I think. This is so fragrant, so pure, so kind of, and it's stony and fresh, as well as being all those fragrant peaches and apricots and flowers and so on. And it's called Les Vignes d'à côté. Like, so the vines beside, they're not from Condrieu, because that would be 70 euros a bottle. They're from the vines beside that. It's about 26 euros a bottle. Le Caveau in Kilkenny imported, but you can find it in Green Man Wines, which is where I picked this up today. You'll get it in any kind of good, better wine shops. Bradley's in Cork should have it as well. Latitude 51 is a place in Cork I was trying to think of. And sort of good independence. But I just love its fragrance. It's a little less acidity for some people. They don't like that. So buying a flabby Languedoc one isn't always a good idea. But spending the extra few quid to get one made by a master like this guy, I think...
lovely. Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know if it's the glass, but it seems to be very light. Mm.
It is. But what I love about this glass is
subtle.
By the way, I should mention the other glasses I have are Spiegelau, which are my favourite cheap glass, Spiegelau, imported by Fevre, not to give. So Mitchell's import Riedel, which is great. Zalto is Sirison's, and these are Fevre. And these are like a fiver each. So,
all right, okay.
Five to seven. Yeah. And they're lovely glasses. You
that's
know?
A, that's a nice looking glass. Anyway, April Felicia Felt, what movie would you like to talk about first?
I'm actually thinking of getting a legal deed poll and changing my name.
Absolutely, you should.
Fabulous.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, you should. Change your checkbook and all that kind of stuff as well. So, Ms. Phil, what one first?
I think in the spirit of my filthiness, let's do the drag movie first. Let's do Everybody's Talking About Jamie.
Okay, everyone's talking about Jamie coming up after this.
Cause baby, I'm a hit.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Legit.
Would you give a warm welcome? For the soon to be legendary
Jamie New.
Me? Sorry, miss. Just daydreaming. Pretty. I got something to show you. You gotta swear not to tell anyone.
Tell anyone what?
I want to be a drag queen.
Oh my days.
So, why do you want to be a drag queen?
Because it's all I ever dream of. And when I close my eyes, it's all I can see.
You just found yourself a mentor.
Yeah, yes, please.
There you go. That's Everybody's Talking About Jamie there. That's on Amazon. Is that right, Esther?
That's right. From today. Yeah. This is lovely. It's fun. It's light. It's kind of what we need right now, I think. And it's got Richard E. Grant in it, which is just, he just brings a Richard E. Grantiness to everything he does. And I love him for that. I don't ever want to see him do Shakespeare, really. He just brings himself into something and a bit of warmth to it. And he's having a blast here. He is a guy by the name of Hugo Battersby, a.k.a. Loco Chanel, a middle-aged former drag artist who takes Jamie under his wing, this teenage boy, and mentors him for the stage. And he's just lovely in it. There's a lot of good supporting characters here, but let's talk about Max Harwood, first of all. A newcomer, a young British actor. I'm not of the view that gay men should play gay characters, but I think it's really interesting, given what this film is about and what it's trying to do, that he is gay, openly gay in real life. And he is just wonderful in this. He is fantastic in it. Like, a star is born. I had a look at his screen credits after watching him in this, and he has a heap of films coming up. Like, everybody's looking for him at the moment. And he just kind of owns the central character. He's this confident young gay man by the name of Jamie. It's in the set in the 80s, and he has to be confident, quite frankly, because life's tough enough. His father, who is separated from his mother, who's played by the lovely Sarah Lancashire, who's so good in this, he is unable to accept his sexuality at all. And, you know, unbeknownst to Jamie, his father has pretty much rejected him and is in another relationship. He doesn't know that because his mum, Sarah Lancashire, her character, keeps sending him gifts and letters and fobbing him off and stuff and saying his dad's busy, so he doesn't realise this decision has been made. And you can imagine what happens there and how heartbreaking that is. And he's also getting, you know, at the hands of the school bullies. So he really needs to be confident. He really needs to be comfortable in his sexuality, I suppose. But he has ambitions for himself as well. He's really, really interested in being a drag artist. And, you know, people are kind of saying to me, you can't do that. So it's kind of a touch of the Billy Elliots about it, I think. And maybe a little bit of the Full Monty thrown in. And of course, it reminded me of The Prom as well, the American movie from last year, also a musical. So this is a musical as well. It's peppered with songs, and it's adapted from the stage musical from 2017. That was a big hit in the West End, even though I wasn't familiar with it. It was quite popular. But as I say, there's a true life story at the heart of this all as well, who, you know, that of Jamie Campbell, who featured in that documentary in the BBC about 10 years ago. So they kind of fictionalize it, but there's a lot of, as you see in the closing credits, there's a lot of the real life character in this, and especially in his connection with his mum, which is really lovely in this. So yeah, he has this, he's trying to forge this meaningful relationship with his dad. The boys in the class are bullying him, but he's got a great friend who's pretty, and she is a Muslim background, and they're very close. They're both kind of feel like outsiders in the class, but they have a real strong bond and a real connection. And that's kind of it. Now, that's a problem with it. You know, the story is very thin here in a way I think that would work on the London stage with big set pieces and flamboyant characters. But there's not enough of a narrative arc in it for a film. It's quite thin in storyline, and it's 2 hours long. So it really drags in places. Sorry, that's a terrible pun. And it just, you know, it would have benefited, I think, from a bit more storyboarding, a bit more storytelling power. Having said that, I like that it's out there. I like that it's made. It's an important film in the loveliest ways. And I think the performances hold it together. Max Harwood is fantastic, as I say, in the lead. But Sarah Lancashire is just lovely. She kind of anchors it in that gritty reality of north of England, as his mother Margaret, in that kind of Billy Elliot kind of way. You know, she's a straight talking woman, doesn't put up with any nonsense from his dad, and loves her boy as he is, and, you know, doesn't even think otherwise. And then Lauren Patel, as I say, lovely as his best friend, pretty. And then sure, Richard E. Grant is just having an absolute blast as Loco Chanel, who kind of mentors the character and kind of encourages him, but discovers a kind of a long suppressed love for getting back on stage himself. And it's just really lovely. It's there's loads of songs in it. I don't think the songs didn't do it for me. I would like to see what it would be like to see them live on stage, because there's a little bit of singing through going on as opposed to just big showstopper numbers, although there are a few of those as well, including He's My Boy, which Sarah Lancashire performs. And you do, you'll be happy to know you get Richard E. Grant singing The Legend of Loco Chanel as well. So it's fun, it's light, it's a bit thin, but just there is a loveliness to it, and it's kind of message of acceptance and tolerance. And yeah, it does. At the same time, I get on the sleeve, this one.
Yeah, I get the sense you wanted to like it more than you did.
Yeah, I wanted it to be a bit more. I thought there was, you know, storytelling potential there in his relationship with his father and stuff, and in the school bullies. It kind of reminded me a few times of Sing Street. And I was thinking about that, John Carney's film, and set in a similar period, of course, and how, you know, just having a bit more complicated characters and a bit more storytelling made that the really great film that it was, I think. The bullies could have been, you know, that could have been, there could have been more urgency to his predicament there, I suppose, and stuff like that. I think, it's made the stage to screen adaptation a little bit too basically. I think you have to remember you're dealing with a different animal when it comes to screen, telling a story like this on screen. Having said that, there's a lot to like about it.
Yeah. Speaking of John Carney, have you seen any of Modern Love, particularly the two Irish, particularly the Irish edition on the train?
I haven't seen any of them. It's terrible. I'm
looking at Serena Bellissimo, and I'm glad there's a screen between us because I think she's just about to projectile vomit when I mentioned
it. Did you like it?
Oh, God, no. Oh God, it was vile. Beyond imagining.
I've heard some people go on about how beautiful the two Irish stories were. And I was just like, no. They were, I found them terribly boring, and I actually this whole season of Modern Love, although we stopped I think at episode 3, Brian's pushing me to keep going, I feel like it lost the reason behind it, and it was terrible.
It's just that Carney gives in to schmaltz a lot, and he seems to particularly have done that,
and I think because it's an American production,
yeah,
he's given what, and maybe he's made this for an American audience who laps all of this up,
yeah.
But watching it in Ireland, I'm just going, it could have done so much better.
I know.
Did the bed break or anything like that?
Oh my God. Yeah. No, I mean, it was mostly Mini Driver and various English actors kind of, going, I love you. That kind of thing. Anyway, you haven't seen it then, Esther, I was wondering.
No.
Stay away.
Okay.
Esther, don't bother.
I do want to hear more of your Mini Driver impression, though.
Yeah. Right, we'll move on from my Mini Driver impersonation. The hashtag, by the way, is Moobs Movies. The Sags of Our Fathers. The Big Pair of Lebowskis, Sagging Private Ryan, and Mary Popouts being four excellent examples of what we have on Twitter today. Now, the Alanis Morissette documentary, this is a weird one in that, like, she spends what seems like a very long time cooperating with these people, giving extensive interviews to them, but then she doesn't like the finished product.
No, and I'm so excited because it's called Jagged. It premiered at the Toronto International Film Festival. It's going to be on HBO. It's named after her 1990s breakout album, Jagged Little Pill.
Yeah.
We all know that. As you said, she spent hours sitting with the filmmakers, giving interviews. And then she's gone, I don't like it. So she released a statement through her publicist and she said, I agreed to participate in a piece about the celebration of Jagged Little Pill's 25th anniversary and was interviewed during a very vulnerable time while in the midst of my third postpartum depression during lockdown. I was lulled into a false sense of security and their salacious agenda became apparent immediately upon my seeing the first cut of the film. This is when I knew our visions were in fact painfully diverged. This was not the story I agreed to tell. She's not turning up to any events. She's not going to do any press for it.
But she did answer the, I mean, I assume because she had been subject to sexual abuse in the past, etc., that maybe that's what it was about. But
And I think she hasn't come out and said exactly what she doesn't like, but, the Washington Post have said that there are certain things that happened in her life that she feels that the production is focusing more on that and rather it be a part of her story.
Mm.
It seems to be the whole part of the film. Now, I haven't seen it, but
I kind of got the impression it's not for the entire film, and it is about an anniversary of
an album
that means an awful lot, still means an awful lot to people so many decades later, etc.
Exactly. And look, do you know what? And I'm not going to talk on behalf of Alanis Morissette because I don't know how she's feeling, but sometimes, when you say stuff, even during an interview, you say stuff and then you watch it back and go, oh, I didn't mean to reveal all of that stuff, and sometimes it's uncomfortable watching that, but that is in fact your truth, but maybe you don't want the world to see that.
But I think she's talked about that stuff before.
Yeah.
So it's not new information.
No, but she's saying it's like, I think she just feels like the focus is on that rather than celebrating the album.
I suppose when people see the documentary, they can make up their own mind.
And you know that more people are now going to watch it, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's almost like by not doing any press, she's given this so much press.
Yeah. Kevin wants to know, the more important question is Ariana Grande in this?
She's going to be in The Bodyguard.
You're never going to live that one down. Right, you are listening to The Moncrief Show and News Talk. One more movie, one more wine to talk about after this. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. Esther and Serena and Leslie are still with us for Movies and Booze. Let's move on to our second wine.
Yes, so second wine is Le Traverser, which means the to travel across, I think. And it is made by three Irish blokes, Simon Tyrrell, he used to have his own wine importing company, Jerry Maguire, who people might know from 64 Wines out in Glastool, and Charles Duran, who's, okay, he's not Irish, but he's been living here long enough that we can kind of call him Irish. He's a wine importer. He was sommelier in Gilbo's back in the day. And the three of them basically own, bought a vineyard at 8 hectares. It's called Les Ducal, I think. And then they've also occasionally, they were buying grapes, and they found this friend of theirs who's across the Rhone. They're on the other side of the Rhone in their main place, but they bought grapes across the side of the river in the Gard, which is just sort of, if you're looking at Avignon, it's sort of southwest of Avignon, on the other side of the river. And this is really old Carignan vine. So Carignan is a grape you don't see much on labels, C-A-R-I-G-N-A-N. Reason is most people are not planting it anymore because it's not great unless it's old. But if you get the grapes 50, 60 years old, they can be really interesting. You get really soft, plummy fruits. You get really
The grapes are that old, or the vines?
The grape vines.
That's patient.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so you get that raisin quality. the vines. So old vine Carignan can be really, really interesting. And actually old vine Sasso, the other grape. But it's 60 Carignan, 40% Grenache. Grenache is the main grape you find in the southern Rhone. This is, by the way, people think Châteauneuf-du-Pape, like Châteauneuf-du-Pape is a village in the Côte de Rhone. Châteauneuf-du-Pape is Côte de Rhone. Yeah. So it's just a village in the Côte d'Aron. It's a posh Côte d'Aron. So is Gigondas, Vacaras, Rasto, Lirac. This is actually made not far from Lirac, if anyone knows Lirac. Just really plummy, fruity. It's 17 vintage. The 19 vintage has just arrived, but most smaller shops will probably still have the 17 vintage. And again, you'll get this in places like Green Man. Searson's are the main agent for distributing it. So obviously Searson's in Monkstown, where I had the Zalto glasses from. But you'll get it in, I think, Bradley's in Cork Habit for certain. You'll get it in a few independents. But just all those sort of plummy, soft fruits.
It's drop dead gorgeous. Yeah.
All that really sort of ripeness and blackberries and brambly fruits and kind of jam almost, but not in a bad way.
No. But it's just hints of those things rather than, you know, there's anything overwhelming there. It's
creamy, fruity.
By a fireplace.
Put this in the fridge for 40 minutes before I came in as well, just to keep it a little cooler.
Okay.
Just to soften.
Good. Yes,
just to bring out the fruit
excellent.
A little bit. Because when I tasted it, when I took it from the cupboard, this is a sample they gave me last year, which I never got around to drinking. It just was a little warm, a little. The alcohol was coming off too much, so I just cooled it down slightly. To bring out the fruits.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, so obviously 64 Wines in Glastool would have it as well. I should mention them because that's where they make it. So they're actually out there at the moment, like standing on grapes and whatever. I think the harvest has not finished yet. They've done most of it, but they haven't actually finished picking yet. And it should be a decent year. They'll have lesser crop, I think, but I think it will be a decent year for them. You know,
right? Okay, excellent stuff. Well, myself and Serena have to arm wrestle for this. Yes. I don't fancy my chances. Tell us about the activists, because this show sounds appalling.
This is mad. And it's so funny how Hollywood just jumps on stuff. So basically, they were going to do, you know how it's all about reality competitions at the moment? They were going to get six activists to appear on this show and do digital campaigns and media stunts about causes that they're really passionate about. They were then going to be judged by their campaign by the likes of Priyanka Chopra, Julianne Hough, who a lot of people may not know here, but she's big in the States. She's done reality stuff over there. She's a dancer as well. And she is an actress. She was once going out with Ryan Seacrest. She was also going to be a part of this. And John Legend.
I'm not hearing much in the way of qualifications in the judging staff,
None of that. But it's bewildering how I know, you know, everyone's trying to do the next big thing, but using social activism as an entertainment thing and judging which campaign deserves more attention than another. So I think they finally got it. And Priyanka Chopra released a statement admitting that the show got it wrong. No surprise there. She says, "I've been moved by the power of your voices over the past week. Geez. At its core, activism is fueled by cause and effect. And when people come together to raise their voice about something, there is always an effect. You were heard.
That's great. Did someone explain that to her afterwards? Usher was one of the judges.
Usher, that's it. Sorry, John Legend. Usher. Like, it's just madness, isn't it? And, like, then to turn it around and sort of go, we've learnt our ways and isn't this great? Your voices were heard. This was really important. So we've changed our mind. They're still doing a one-off thing where they raise awareness for these causes, but I think they should walk away from it. And do you know what this reminds me of? Do you remember at the start of the pandemic when all the stars came together and they did the
Yes. Oh God, yes. It was the Imagine song all over again.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, except they were planning on televising it. And have we really turned into a real life Hunger Games?
Whereas that song was just like crap, objectively. This is crass on all sorts of, this is like, you know, having a reality where we pay for your funeral or we shoot you.
Completely.
Or you get to go to hospital for a life-saving operation.
Die one to vote for the kittens. Yeah. Die two to vote for the starving children.
Yeah.
Completely. Like, I don't know who thought it was. Like, it's not only just with the judges. It is with the production company behind this who just went, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Let's make money off this
TV
tragedy
bubble.
And
who's planning to broadcast this or stream it? Or,
well, see, I don't know. I think they've all gone quiet. The people who are getting the heat, unfortunately, are the judges, the stars who actually
poor
put their...
Oh, sure. What did he ever do?
Although, do you know what? He hasn't said anything
yet.
CBS,
apparently, he was going to do
it. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I just think it's just madness. Priyanka did say, the show got it wrong, and I'm sorry that my participation in it disappointed many of you. The intention was always to bring attention to the people behind the ideas and highlight the actions and impact of the causes they support tirelessly. I think they should just walk away and not do anything at all.
Yeah, but apparently...
They're going to do a one-off special.
A one-off special.
Yeah, I don't know about what, but, you know.
Yeah, they're going to do one documentary about really making a really crap TV show. That would be an idea. Right, we will move on to our second movie of the day. It is Rose Plays Julie. Here's a clip.
I like the name Julie. When I think about Julie, I picture her like me, but different. Different clothes, different accent, different hair. For some reason, I always imagine her with short hair. I don't know why. I can't help thinking that somehow, if you had managed to hold on to me, I'd be living a different life right now. I'd be this other person. Perhaps the person I was really meant to be. The real me.
There you go. That's Rose Plays Julie. So is this kind of a somebody takes over somebody else's life type scenario?
Yeah, there's a lot. First of all, I'm feeling a little poignant there hearing that back, because this is one of the last films I saw before life changed. It was in Dublin Film Festival. It was early March 2020. There we all were, you know, delightfully clueless, jammed into a cinema, watching this, and there was a Q&A with the two actors, Anne Skelly and Orla Brady, afterwards. They were the last people I did face-to-face interviews with the next day, Sean. We've been on Zoom ever since, and I actually had to top-up interviews with both of them on Zoom last week, and we were just talking about, God, little did we know what was coming, you know? But anyway... Aside from that, this is really, really good. It was a big hit at the festival. The audience really responded well to it. I had to watch it a second time before reviewing. It's so long ago since I've seen it. And I really enjoyed it on second viewing. I have to say there is a richness to it. So Anne Skelly is Rose. People might know her from HBO's series The Nevers. I know that's been a big hit for them. She's one of the leads in that. But she's playing a veterinary student. She's kind of struggled with her sense of place ever since she found out she was adopted, I think around the age of 8. She's a really strange character. She's kind of troubled and potentially troublesome and very hard to read. So not this kind of plucky heroine that we'd often get in movies like this. You kind of don't know what she's capable of. And she finally tracks down her birth mother, who's played by Orla Brady, who's really good here as well. And she is Ellen, a successful actress. So you have little scenes within scenes in this film. And she has kind of buried the secret behind her adopted daughter deep within her. She's told nobody of her daughter's existence, not even her other daughter, who Rose meets when she arrives at the house. So that is chilling, actually. They're around the same age. You're going, what's going on here? So she travels to London. She kind of is not in the mood to accept rejection, and she arrives at the house. There's a house viewing, so she arrives in to see that. And there's a great scene where Orla Brady's character takes one look at her at the door, and she knows she's her daughter. So again, the intrigue is building there, you know. I don't want to give away too much, but there is a Me Too kind of thing going on here that feels very pertinent and very, very timely. And you discover, I suppose, that Ellen, the circumstances behind Ellen giving the daughter up for adoption are very painful. There's a lot of trauma involved. And it's, you know, a much more painful and deeper, complicated past than the younger woman, Rose, could have even realised, you know. Mm. So that leads her to start looking for her father, who's played by Aidan Gillen. And he's a successful archaeologist, and he's carrying out a major dig. So metaphor is abound there, you know, digging up your past and all that. And she's kind of possibly influenced by her mother's career. She decides to take on a persona. So this kind of turns from very clever. It fools you into thinking it's a drama. And I suppose with Irish films of this genre, they often turn out to be drama, you know, but it turns into a bit of a psychological thriller, even with elements of horror to it, I would say. And that kind of happens when she adopts the persona of this young actress named Julie, hence the title Rose Plays Julie, in a bid to find out more about her father and what his take on events of the past are. Skirting around plot lines like mad there. So it's just the reveals in it are really good, you know. It's written and directed by two filmmakers by the name of Christine Molloy and Joe Lawler. They'd be regarded as kind of experimental in tone in some of their films, although this feels quite mainstream to me. It definitely takes a different approach, though. I loved how it skirted the lines between drama and psychological thriller. I thought that was very clever. It felt fresh to me. It felt like something I hadn't seen before, and it's very good. It's very, really original. I think, you know, it was in the works long before Me Too happened, but it seems strangely prescient in the topic it handles, I have to say, given the events of the last few years, and I think that gives it an edge as well. The two leads are fab, and Aidan Gillen's very good, actually, kind of delightfully snaky as her father.
Have you ever interviewed Aidan Gillen?
Yes, I have.
And has he ever said, I'm sick to death? Like, when has he made a light romantic comedy where he's, you know, a bit of a knockabout? You know, he's always cast as, like, not very nice people. It doesn't seem to be fair.
It's strange, isn't it? I mean, I think it's a very conservative industry, you see, the film industry. I think when they know you're good at doing one thing, they can get you to do it over and over again. And I think I can't speak for Aidan Gillen or his choices or the choices he makes or why he makes them. But I think you have to, as a young actor in particular, you have to be really careful to not fall down that trap, I think, and not get cast as the same thing over and over again, you know. But I have to say, I haven't always liked his performances, but I think he's really, really good in this. There's a sleight of hand that's needed into performance that he delivers really well, I think.
Right. Okay. All right. That sounds very interesting indeed. And that's in cinemas. It should be pointed out, ye oldly fashioned cinemas.
From today.
Anyway, someone has won 20 grand. Here's them doing it.
It's the competition giving you life changing cash. The 20K giveaway on News Talk.
The lines have closed. We've selected a random number from all our correct entries. And I could be calling you right now. Here we go.
Hello.
Hi there, can I ask who I'm speaking to?
Niamh Riley.
Niamh, whereabouts are you in this country of ours?
In Santry.
Lovely stuff. And what are you up to for the day, Niamh?
Just working from home at the moment.
So, Niamh, can I ask you a question? Did you enter a competition this week?
I did.
Okay, interesting. Rightio. Niamh, I can tell you that you did enter a competition. You selected the right answer. And Niamh, I'm very happy to tell you that you've just won €20,000!
Are you actually joking?
No!
No, seriously, are you actually messing?
I'm not messing at all. €20,000 is all yours.
I don't believe this. Is this a wind-up?
It's not a wind-up, I promise you.
What?
Yeah.
I actually feel like I'm going to get sick.
Please don't.
Oh my God, thank you so much.
There you go. That's Niamh in Santry there, who would seem to get very excited when she told she wants 20 grand. Didn't faze her at all. Some complete randomer rang her up and asked her what she was doing at home. I had to slam down the phone and call the guards immediately. Anyway, that's our lot for this week. Thanks, of course, to Leslie Williams, Serena Bellissimo and April Felicia Filth.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl. More for you.
Enjoy alcohol sensibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.